Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. Yes, indeed. It is the 18th day of January, 2017. This is the Horn, headonradionetwork.com. Newly redesigned and looking really schmick is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room and join in with the likes of Anatole and Hoghead and Jugga Punch and soon-to-be moderator Steve from Georgistan alongside, you know, me, yours truly. And participate in the multimedia, madcap, wacky, wonderful, zany, real-time extravaganza that is the chat room during the 3 hours of the evening when the program is live. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Yes, yes, indeed. And also, because this is a listener-supported program, oh no, not the sneezing again, stand by. It's a little freaking early for pollen, isn't it? Well, maybe not. I don't. Anyway, this is a listener-supported broadcast, and I want to thank our subscribers, one and all, for making sure that we did not get into a hole overnight. You know, we closed the program last night. $150 yet to go in fundraising. And yet there we and we managed not to continue in the hole because of our subscribers. If you'd like to be a subscriber, you are more than welcome to join in. It is much appreciated. When you go to headonradionetwork.com and you click on the Contribute tab, there's a little box you can check that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation. And that's what folks like Adam in Missouri and Jamie in California and a dear friend not in the continental United States who wishes to remain anonymous, and Kurt in Kansas, and a friend in Oregon have all done so that we don't have a deficit this evening. We've just got our regular $200 to raise. So thank you very, very kindly to all our subscribers. I can't tell you how critical that is in keeping us from getting into a god-awful hole. Thank you very kindly. It's a really big deal. And one of these days, well, we're going for 100 subscribers now. Eventually, we'd like to have 400. But as it is, we'll try to reach $200 this evening, one at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 1/4, 64 at $3.13. Because we cheat and round up from that last 12.5 cents. And we take the extra there, that extra half penny. And we put it in the tip jar for Agnes's masseur. Yes. But the PayPal interface is right there at headonradionetwork.com. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, that's cool too. And the way you do that is, well, the address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. And checks and money orders, let me know. I'll tell Boss Man Wayne. And he can leave the spider-proof gloves in the big red truck. And all he'll have to take with him is, a cat of nine tails that he keeps there behind the seat in case he runs into the grand exalted Cyclops of the Klan, being as how they get their mail there at that UPS store, too. Mm-hmm. So it's 6 minutes past the hour. And we are at the middle of the week, somehow or another. Third full week of broadcasting in this here month of January, named after the god Janus, a two-faced god, looking in either direction. And apparently, in a world of climate change, that fits for January, because it is certainly... It's certainly not what we expect January to be here. It's about 40 degrees outside, down from a high earlier today of 54. We're looking to 58, 61, 64. Those kinds of highs. Nary a snowflake in sight for like the next week and a half. So January is certainly a mite on the strange side. But they're still looking for massive rain and gray skies in Washington, D.C. on Friday for the inauguration of the tiny-handed dictator and the beginning of the who knows what of the next 4 years. Hey, Trey in Kentucky Stan has just wandered into the room. Hey, Trey, good to see you. Hoghead has joined us as well, as has Flavio up in Wisconsin. Trump Conson? Is that Trump Conson? Yeah. Welcome aboard, one and all. And thank you very kindly to Bill. Bill got us started a little bit earlier down in Florida. Thank you, Bill. We've got that means we've only got 175 to go. And Glenn just took us down to 165 to go. So thank you to Bill and to Glenn for getting us started. That's a big help. It is a bigger help than you know. Now, where to begin? I know this being Wednesday that we often focus, because Wednesday, on stories from the right-wing religion industry. And we've kind of got that. We do. And we'll probably get to that. But there's other stuff too. Oh, wow. Okay. Does that qualify as breaking news? Information coming in via Twitter from Plurf. Tony Orlando will be headlining the D.C. inauguration ball. #TieAYellowOldie. I guess, what, Don couldn't make it? No jokes there. That wouldn't be nice. But we've got our prayer meeting Wednesday stuff, and we'll get to it. Because it's there, and it's for the taking, as it were. But there are a couple of other things. I don't know if you noticed or not. Probably not. Well, we talked a couple of weeks ago about the, or maybe it was a week ago, about the Gospel Sharps, who will be preaching and speechifying and praying and laying on hands and passing around the snakes and swigging strychnine and whatever all it is that they do at the upcoming inaugural. Oh, early cowbell for Jack down in Shreveport. That yellow ribbon Tony Orlando sings about was white before the Trump pee-pee incident, if you know what I mean. I do. Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you, Jack. We're off and running. Scott and Punky pointing out, Friday forecast for D.C., massive rain and hopefully a large squadron of flying pigs, all of whom haven't had a healthy, messy dump since the Iowa caucus in February 2016. Look, I'm still considering there's the possibility that Trump's spray tan will run and he'll wind up looking like some yellowish-orange version of, you know, that scene from Carrie. Mm-hmm. I mean, a guy can hope, right? But anyway, I mentioned that a bunch of folks had been planned to preach and carry on and whatnot this Friday. There's one less available practitioner of the prosperity gospel. Bishop Eddie Long. The new birth in abundant life, abundant yada 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 church ministries in Lithonia, Georgia, has gone home to be with Jesus, or at least he thought he was. If there's an afterlife, I imagine somebody met him on the way and went, no, not you. No. You get the asbestos suit. You disgusting pig. Because, among other things, Bishop Eddie Long apparently had a predilection for having sex with, shall we say, young people. Young, under the age of consent people. And shuffled off this mortal coil in past week. So he won't be able to be in Washington, D.C. to pray for Benito Cheeto's reign. R-E-I-G-N, not R-A-I-N. The praying against the R-A-I-N, praying for the R-E-I-G-N. That's how that works. Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of true and exciting stories of faith in action, but some other news too. Yeah. Yeah. What do I mean by that? Well, there's just some stuff that We probably need to at least make mention of on the world stage. it turns out that not only is Julian Assange a hypocrite, he's a coward too. You know, he had promised, and by promised, I mean gave whatever passes for his word, that he would leave the Ecuadorian embassy in London if his demand that Chelsea Manning be released was met. In fact, it was the 12th day of January, 2017, when WikiLeaks tweeted, "If Obama grants Manning clemency, Assange will agree to U.S. extradition despite clear unconstitutionality of DOJ case." Blah, 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 blah. There's only one problem. There's no case against Assange. He's never been charged with anything in the United States. Ever. At all. But anyway, I mean, that's pretty clear, right? Except now he's changed his mind. Some pettifogging lawyer for him has said that even though Chelsea Manning's case was commuted, this according to Barry Pollack, his lawyer in the U.S., "Obama's commutation of Chelsea Manning's sentence does not meet the conditions of the WikiLeaks head's offer to be extradited to the United States." Well, I just read you the whole tweet. Did you hear any conditions in there? "If Obama grants Manning clemency, Assange will agree to you." Even though, again, there are no charges against Julian Assange. And he still hasn't worked up the common grace or decency to say thank you. Although President Obama did have his final press conference today. And apparently there's people out there who are having a conniption about Chelsea Manning, her sentence being commuted. I don't know who those people are or what sort of old Maxwell House coffee cans they live in. But 7 years in Leavenworth is plenty for what she did. I wonder if Julian, because and I do, I worry, I'm not being a smart aleck about this. Chelsea Manning's going to come out of Leavenworth with a felony conviction. She wasn't pardoned. Her sentence was commuted. And a dishonorable discharge from the United States military, which is a pretty big stain against one's future. I wonder if Julian Assange set aside any money that he made off of Chelsea Manning's back. Or maybe Glenn Greenwald. I wonder if Glenn Greenwald set any money aside for Chelsea Manning. There's just something that tells me the answer to that is probably no. No. But Julian Assange is he's had a change of heart. I guess he likes it there at the Ecuadorian embassy. But we've got a bunch of stuff, and it's going to get weirder and weirder and weirder as we move into our new future. Such as it is. Anybody here know who Vincent Viola is? Oh, okay. Well, that clears that up. Thank you, Ron. Ron in the far frozen north. Who are the people complaining about Manning commutation? Why, they're paid conniptioners, Bob. Didn't even know there was such a thing, although you know, in a capitalist world, I shouldn't be surprised, I suppose. Paid conniptioners. No, Vincent Viola. Vincent Viola is the apparent thug whom the orange one has nominated to be Secretary of the Army. And apparently Vincent Viola takes that Army slogan of an army of one seriously. Oh, Vincent Viola, by the way, is also a hedge fund billionaire. and we're going to drain the swamp. Oops. Yeah, I don't think Vincent Viola qualifies as a swamp drain. He also owns the Florida Panthers NHL franchise. It turns out that last August, in Saratoga Springs, New York, Vincent Viola punched a guy in the face. Was it another hedge fund billionaire with whom he was having it? No, it was just some guy running a concession at the racetrack at Saratoga Springs, New York. No, really. When the police showed up, they found a man bleeding from a swollen lip, and Viola said he struck the man because earlier in the day, Teresa Viola said the man had shoved her when she entered a restricted area to get water for a woman whom she said had fainted. Yeah. So, 45 minutes later, former U.S. Army Ranger Vincent Viola went to seek out the man and started arguing with him, and he punched him in the face. According to Greg Vitch, the police chief of Saratoga Springs, it was determined that both incidents involved actions that could have been charged as harassment, a violation-level offense in New York State. But since the police didn't actually witness Vincent Viola, hedge fund billionaire and NHL franchise owner, punching the dude in the face, they chose not to file charges. I'm sure being a hedge fund billionaire and owner of an NHL franchise had absolutely nothing to do with it. That the police just happened not to witness the altercation. A spokescreep for hedge fund billionaire and NHL franchise owner Vincent Viola later clarified, Mr. Viola will always stand up and defend his wife, and in this case there was a simple disagreement with the matter being dropped and no charges were filed. Mr. Viola notified the transition team of the disagreement early on in the process, and we consider this matter closed. You understand? You know what closed means? Closed means you leave it alone or you get a horse's head in your bed. That's what closed means. Okay, I added all that last part. Right. Secretary of the Army. Now, it's not like the guy shoved his wife and Viola was standing there and, hey, you bastard, you, and punched him in the face. No. He waited 45 minutes and then went and punched him in the face. This is, let's just say that's not a hedge fund billionaire. It would not have been much of a problem to treat this as a crime. But we wouldn't want poor Vincent Viola to have to incur legal fees to defend a charge of battery. VJ writes in and says, you asked who's against clemency? Oh, dear God. Rick Santorum was on CNN today. Really? Bro Fro Mix was on CNN? The fetus fondler? The guy who has absolutely no relevance to anything whatsoever, but somehow keeps getting asked to show up on CNN? Saying how bad this was for U.S. intelligence, since it undermines their work and makes it okay for anyone to release information. When it was brought up that Manning had already served 7 years, he exclaimed, that's not enough! This being prayer meeting Wednesday and all, let's do remember, after all, that Rick Sanctum Santorum is a big, serious practitioner of his Roman Catholic faith. Yeah, only not so much. That whole vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Nah, vengeance is Rick Santorum's, right? Yeah. Especially where blah people are concerned. If there is any net good, if there's anything to be gained by the fact that somebody at CNN keeps calling up hopelessly irrelevant, not any member of government in any way, probably lobbyist, hustler, scumbag Rick Santorum, is that, well, if there's any good to be said of it, it's the fact that they put him side by side with Van Jones so Van can have a little snack.
With David and Gloria, that a couple of his comments I think were very good comments, that talking about the team is an important thing. And you know, Donald Trump...
And I should add, this passage has to do with how upset Bro Fro Mix is, the frothy mixture, Santorum, how upset he is at how damn disgustingly progressive that blah man who's leaving our White House sounded today in his final press conference.
Has shown that he's not always listening, and I think it is a good thing to surround yourself with people, and he has. Everyone talks about how he's got folks from all different parts of the Republican Party around him. And I think he will eventually, over time, I think, start listening to them. But I have to tell you,
he's got folks from all parts of the Republican Party. He's got people from the evangelical part of the Republican Party. He's got people from the Goldman Sachs part of the Republican Party. Goldman Sachs! Oh, my God! Hillary! The devil! She took money from Goldman Sachs to make speeches. Oh, my Jesus! Hillary, oh, God! Sorry. Just have to keep the sparkle fart-powered unicorn cavalry purity patrol happy. That's all. But they've got, they've got representatives from the hedge fund part of the Republican Party. They've got representatives from the just plain old-fashioned God-forsaken batshit crazy part of the Republican Party. You know, your teabaggers, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, and booger eaders. They're all represented in the Trump candidate in the Trump cabinet. And Bro Fro Mix is sure that one of these days Trump's going to listen to him. But you might note that in that clip, we paused on the word "but." Precisely, Gerald. He's got folks from one end of Wall Street to the middle of Wall Street to the other end of Wall Street. Drain the swamp, y'all. Got it? Good.
conservative on the panel here. This is a painful thing for conservatives to watch. I mean, it really was. Because
Obama
leaving? Yeah, no, just listening to his, you know, his laying out of all these things that he's going to continue to go out there and speak on. When, number one, presidents generally don't do that. Presidents generally leave and then go away and allow.
Not that you know anything about that, Dick. But no, Rick Santorum is a. He's a bubbling wellspring of historical knowledge about what presidents do and don't do after they're done president. The real model out there is Richard Pinhead Nixon, who went and walked on the beach in his Brooks Brothers Oxfords. Jesus. Yeah, I know.
Things to function without him. I think you're right, Gloria. I think he's made the case. Now, I think I'm going to stick around.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's helpful. I don't think if you look at the fact that this president signed less bills into Congress and less bills into law than any president in modern history.
And that was why? Because the bills that came to his desk were written in crayon, brown and black. You know, it's a psychology thing I learned many years ago. Because of a practical joke that was played by a friend of mine on someone else I knew. He went to visit this friend of ours who was cooling his heels in the jail over a raft of charges stemming from stupid things that he had done. And whilst there, our buddy complained, you know, I don't even have anything to write with. And all they give me is crayons. So, this guy, knowing what I'm about to mention, snuck away with all the crayons except the brown and the black ones. Because apparently, according to psychological lore, if all you ever work with are brown and black crayons, it's a sign that you're seriously disturbed. But anyway, I don't know. That may or may not be true. I'll leave that to the psychological professionals to clue me in. Yeah. But it's kind of understandable that Barack Obama didn't sign just a whole bunch of bills into law, seeing as how the only bills that the teabaggers, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, and booger eaters ever sent him were, bills where he would declare himself a communist Kenyan Muslim wizard who needed to be burned at the stake, or a bill that, 58 of them, I think, that would have taken health care away from millions and millions and millions of people. Not a lot of bills out there worth signing. Bro Fromix, Steve in New York, says, don't tell me David Barton schooled him in history. I would not be surprised. Subject line, of course, courtesy of Matt in San Francisco, Republican presidents go away and be quiet because they leave in disgrace. And I watched the press conference. I mean, Barack Obama said, look, I'm not running in for anything. I'm not going to be on the ballot. But if I see things happening that I think are really, really bad, I'm going to speak up. And I welcome him so to do. Maybe as a common citizen, he'll find a way to be a little more vociferous in his pronouncements than he was as the coolest guy in the country. You know, no drama, Obama. There was a lot of blather today about the peaceful transition of power and. How Trump needs to listen to his advisors and have a team and be willing to consider opinions other than those of his own and blah, 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 blah. And there was one question that was asked. I mean, sometimes the elite Johnny-on-the-spot Washington press corps just amazes me with their not awesomeness. Mr. President, will you please tell us what you think about all these Democrats who are boycotting the inauguration and why they and why they're doing it, and this isn't exactly a good way to have a peaceful transition of power, is it? And then he asked a second question, which Obama answered first, and then got around to saying, and he said, look, I'm not going to criticize anybody. I'm going to be there, and Michelle's going to be there. Hell, Hillary's going to be there. Hillary? Oh, my God! The devil! At least we're going to be saved from having her in the White House. At least we won't have to worry about having health care. We've been saved from that Kenyan Muslim Obamacare. Thank God. Jeez. Anyway, back to Bro Fromix, who's very upset about the fact that Barack Obama's not just going to go away and quietly be blah somewhere else.
Less than one-term presidents of Carter and Bush. This has not been a guy who's been helpful in getting things done in Washington. And I don't think his speech tonight, I mean, his press conference, did anything to help that. He continued to take a very hard...
Now, I realize I'm talking about video here, which is not necessarily a good thing on the radio. But have you ever seen, say, a mouse dropped into a terrarium with, say, a boa constrictor? And the mouse with these beady little eyes runs around the terrarium for a minute. Sometimes they'll even hop up on top of the snake. And then they realize, oh, shit. I'm in a terrarium with a boa constrictor. I'm screwed. And the whole time the snake's just kind of sitting there all cool, all calm, all relaxed, just kind of wiggling his coils a little bit, just kind of looking at the beady-eyed little white mouse, little flick of the tongue, because he knows he's about to have a snack. Well, they got Van Jones. CNN put Van Jones right next to Bro Fromix. And he's just looking at Rick Santorum fulminating about how unhelpful Barack Obama was. And Van Jones just has this, I'm going to eat you look on his face. And I got to tell you, it's precious. Let's listen and see how much longer Rick runs around the terrarium.
Left progressive approach to almost every single issue, and I can tell you, someone sitting here watching it, I mean, it was painful because I found very little other than the platitudes that we can sort of all agree with. Very painful to see this president, sort of stick with the program that could never get passed up here in Washington.
I just find it odd to hear a Trump supporter make the case for normalcy. That what we need now is normalcy. I think we have the most abnormal political situation that we've had, and I think in large part because of the conduct of President-elect Trump as a candidate and now as a president-elect and probably as a president. And I think it was very important, actually, for President Obama to lay out for what is now becoming an anti-Trump resistance in the country, where he can be counted on to speak up, and frankly, where he can be counted on not to speak up. He said in the normal give and take, in the normal back and forth about taxes, about the environment, those sorts of things, let that go on, that's good. But there are some key issues that are key to the country, and on those issues, you will not fight alone. On issues about core discrimination against people based on their faith, mistreating these young dreamers, dissent being cracked down on. And frankly, what you want a former president to do is to be there on the big issues and the big controversies, because that is the moral stature, the moral standing. And Obama, I think, as you can see with the 60% of support, should be heard from.
Senator Santorum, let me ask you, because he clearly did lay out a framework for, I'm going to be quiet. There's going to be disagreements. He's going to do things. President Donald Trump is going to do things differently from the way I did it. But there are some core issues where I will speak up. And he did talk about them. Systemic discrimination, ratified, explicit and functional obstacles to the right to vote, efforts to silence dissent or the press, and round.
Uh-oh, Bro Fro Mix is making notes.
Rounding up young children who have been in this children who are in this country illegally, dreamers, and deporting them. Those four areas. What did you think of him laying that out like that?
Well, I thought it was sort of funny that this president, who's done more to attack people of faith, try to get Little Sisters of the Poor to buy abortions. To me,
no, he didn't, dipshit. God damn these liars! Damn them for the liars they are. Well, he was trying to make the Little Sisters of the Poor reach their poor little forearms up into women's hoo-hoos and pull out little fully formed babies and stab them in the back of the neck with a pair of scissors. He's been a big one for talking for the scissor talk in the past. Yeah, absolutely. He didn't do that. It was simply a matter of saying the insurance coverage that the Little Sisters of the Poor provide needs to take care of women's reproductive health care. Ooh, he tried to make the Little Sisters of the Abortion, Little Sisters of the Poor buy abortions. God damn liar. Being prayer meeting Wednesday and everything. This might be an appropriate time to note that, well, damn it. Once again, the almighty ruler, creator of the universe has proved himself and rather impotent in the process. Because he didn't send a lightning bolt down to, Rick Santorum, for lying in public, in front of millions of people. It's one of those commandment things. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. And being as how they're sitting in Washington, D.C., I guess you could call Barack Obama his neighbor. Granted, it would be his blah neighbor that if he actually moved into Rick Santorum's neighborhood, Rick Santorum would have to then sell his house and move somewhere else and engage in some white flight. But that, you know how that goes. Abortions!
It's unbelievable that the president would even use that as a marker. I mean, this president has been anti-faith and has tried to drive a secularism into this country.
No, he hasn't. And there's no such thing as driving a secularism into this country. The Constitution is secular. Ain't got no God in it. In fact, it could even be said to be somewhat hostile to religion, insofar as it does contain that one statement that there shall be no religious test for the holding of office. And in point of fact, if you go back to the notes on the ratification of the Constitution, you will find that that particular passage, no religious test for the holding of office, there really wasn't anybody in the convention who was going, no, I want a religious test. It's one of the few things on which practically everybody there was in complete and total agreement. Other issues, the Southern plantation-owning delegates and stuff, they wanted to make sure that populations were counted in their slave-holding states, including counting the slaves who couldn't vote, had no rights. They had the right to be killed on the whim of the master. But apart from that, they got counted as 3/5 of a human being for purposes of apportioning members of the House of Representatives. Mm-hmm. But on the religious test thing, there was no disagreement to speak of. None. But Santorum says he was hostile to the faith community, and he tried to inject secularism into America. You ever get the idea? Do you realize how dangerous And maybe this little bit of perspective is valuable at this particular time. Donald Trump is a nightmare that we are about to enter. It's Wednesday. The inauguration that none of us is going to watch is on Friday. Now, I mean, if the rains are big enough that, like, Trump gets swept down into the Potomac, I will turn the TV on for that. But beyond that. And then there will be moral choices. You know, Trump bobbing along on the flood tide into the Potomac and a man standing there. And all he has to do is reach out his hand and he's thinking, you know, do I shoot this landscape or portrait? Yeah. I mean, we are about to nod off into a national nightmare. There's no getting around it. And you know, for all of his progressive Kenyan Muslim wizardry that was on display today, one of the things that Barack Obama did say, he said, in my core, I believe America will be okay. And of course, words mean things. Words mean things. In his core, he believes America will be okay. That means there's some other part of Barack Obama that doesn't think America's going to be okay. Maybe it's a little further out from the core. Just saying, not saying. Mm-hmm. But no, I simply point out that while Trump is in fact a national nightmare, if that man, Bro Fromix, the fetus fondler, had ever gotten anywhere near the reins of power, he would have done everything in his his power to turn us into a full-blown theocracy. And he would have had a lot of help along the way. I mean, as you can tell from his previous remarks, but he gets really, really head up about a woman being able to control the reproductive workings of her own body. Rick Santorum feels like he and, you know, maybe the Pope or a bishop or two should be able to make that decision for her by telling her she can't do that at all. Same, contraception, whatever. Well, we would be in a terrible fix if a theocrat like Rick Santorum got close to the reins of power. And by the way, why is Rick Santorum not in the Trump cabinet? Ah, not sufficiently obsequious, perhaps. But this is an appropriate time to remind us that there are other dangers out there. I mean, I know a whole lot of us do not want Donald Trump to be the president of the United States. And even on prayer meeting Wednesday, when we celebrate the excesses of the religion industry, well, we can't overlook the dangers of the guy who's behind Donald Trump. To wit. Mike Pence, you know. Granted, he's not Roman Catholic, but he's every bit the theocrat that Rick Santorum is. And I go back and forth on this issue. Mike Pence is at least a somewhat traditional Republican who might not necessarily be quite so easily purchased by the Russians. So we got that going for us. But the man can't get through 1 minute out of 1 hour of a 24-hour day without thinking about fetuses and abortion and them demon-filled women's what wants to have they probably want to have an abortion every 2 or 3 days just because they have so much fun killing the babies. So as we ponder whither we wander, we might do well to remember what's behind him. And because I'm such a gall-danged history nerd, I can't help thinking about another delicate time of cusp, if you will, in human history. Now, to compare Donald Trump to Gaius Julius Caesar is a grave disservice to Caesar. Because say what you will, the man was brilliant. Say what you will, Donald Trump is not. In fact, I can't remember the name for it, but there's some syndrome out there. It's a psychological phenomenon that's diagnosable. For people who aren't that bright, but are convinced they're geniuses. And it's the somebody-somebody syndrome. And while I am not a professional diagnostician or any form of one, if you read the general description of that syndrome, it sure does seem like Trump's got a chronic case of it. Out there talking all the time about what a good mind he has and what a big brain he has and how he's genetically predisposed to be a deal maker when all he is a petty little real estate grifter who happened to have a whole bunch of money to play with. But the larger point is that about, 2,060 plus years ago, the people of the Roman Republic were getting kind of antsy. Well, no, not the people. Not the Populusque Romani. What's this? It says Romans go home. No, it doesn't. Anyway, SPQR, Senatus Populusque Romanus. Ite. Anyway, no, the Senate, the wildly wealthy controllers of the levers of power, influence, and wealth in ancient Rome had decided, a group of them, that Caesar had developed a regal urge. And the whole history of the Republic stemmed from the time when the Roman people threw out the last of the Roman kings. And there were all kinds of things reported by the ancient authors that he wore the wrong color boots. At one point when he was making his way through the city, someone offered him a crown, and he made a big show of refusing the crown, which his opponents then said, well, of course he would. I mean, that's all a big show. That's all he wants is a crown. It's kind of like Fox News, you know? And so eventually, a group of senators, wildly wealthy, including, of course, Brutus and Cassius and a number of others, decided that they had to strike a blow for freedom. And freedom with an asterisk, meaning their freedom, their wealth, and take out Julius Caesar. Which they then did. A very famous scene. It took place in the room where the Senate was meeting in the theater of Pompey, over on the Campus Martius. And they immediately ran out in the streets, putting on their caps of liberty, yelling, freedom, freedom, only to realize that no, nobody was really hankering for Caesar to be knifed 36 or 19 or 38 or however many times it was. This then precipitated a full-on civil war that wound up. It took a few years, and there was some wrangling involved, but eventually Cassius and Brutus and the lot found themselves not being alive. And more importantly, what had been the Republic, and probably the Republic was dead long since, but they were at least trying to maintain the facade of it. The Republic died and was replaced by imperial rule in the form of Caesar's grandnephew, Octavian, who finally consolidated that rule with the death of Mark Antony and Cleopatra. And then imposed the Pax Romana and a bunch of phony baloney bullshit semblances of classical Roman probity of the ancient era. So I would simply say that we want to be somewhat circumspect in how we approach the next 4 years. There is no, there's no quick way out of this funhouse. We have bought the ticket. We are on the ride. That clacking sound, as was pointed out a few nights ago, is dinging in our ears as we go up the hill, wondering what's on the other side. But one thing is for certain. Barring... just look at the line of succession. Okay, no Trump, you get Pence. No Pence, you get Ryan. No Ryan, you get the president pro tem of the Senate. He's got, as of sometime Friday afternoon, like immediately after the swearing in, Trump will be impeachable on his business dealings alone and his failure to divest and violations of rules regarding nepotism and emoluments. Hell, he still thinks emoluments are something that he rubs on Russian hookers before they go pee-pee. We're taking this ride. We are taking this ride. And it's going to be harrowing. But the Congress will not impeach him. And even if after a couple of weeks, the requisite number of members of the cabinet get together and look at each other and go, Jesus, he really is nuts. And try to 25th Amendment his ass. You still wind up with Pence. A theocrat on the order of Rick Santorum. A man, when he isn't fantasizing about the precious little fetuses, is thinking about all the various and sundry ways that those gay people have their gay sex. This is kind of on us. Progressives were woefully unable to see their own candidate through to the nomination for the Democratic nomination for the presidency. They failed to convince people to the tune of about somewhere between 2 and 3 million Americans. And then a number of them just couldn't quite bring themselves to rally around and prevent this from happening because, of course, they have such high and pure virtues that they couldn't possibly compromise them by voting for the devil! And then, of course, there's the simple, sad fact of the number of really, really ignorant people who actually went out and voted for this guy. You know, 3 million less people than voted for Hillary, but still sufficient to turn the tide in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, so that the outdated and hopelessly racist Electoral College could hand him the presidency. To that extent, we got some ownership in this. And we're going to take the ride. But I suggest that we do our puking now, and then get a little cold water on the back of the neck and the code. Yeah, that's what we need, a little cold water on the back of the neck and the code, and be wide-eyed and sober about what's coming in our direction. It's not going to be nice. Ain't going to be easy. They're going to be pretty. And whatever work there is to be done in the form of resistance, will be a challenge, and it will not be without risk. If you really, really, really want to see him gone before his four-year term is up, you've got your work damn sure cut out for you to get a Democratic majority in the House of Representatives in 2018 and a two-thirds Democratic majority in the Senate of the United States. Because this Congress is a hog that's got its front feet in the trough and its back trotters in there too. And such hogs are damnably difficult to dislodge. Yeah, once again, not trying to be an overly bright little ray of sunshine here. But we better not have our rose-colored glasses on. A lot of people are going to be marching on Saturday. Good on you. What you do Saturday is not nearly as important, however, as what you do Sunday and Monday and Tuesday going forward. I really don't have anywhere to march. I'd march, but there's nowhere to march. Not for me. For I live in the rural wilds of West Trump, Virginia. The Trumpiest place in the whole country. Yeah. Oh, thank you, Carol Baker. It's the Dunning-Kruger effect. That hyphenated two people's name phrase from psychology. The Dunning-Kruger effect. This pattern of overestimating competence was seen in studies of skills as diverse as reading comprehension, practicing medicine, operating a motor vehicle, and playing games such as chess or tennis. Dunning and Kruger proposed that for a given skill, incompetent people will fail to recognize their own lack of skill, fail to recognize the extent of their inadequacy, fail to accurately gauge skill in others, recognize and acknowledge their own lack of skill only after they are exposed to training for that skill. Sound like anybody we know? Thank you, Carol. I don't know. How in God's name can I just say two hyphenated names thingy for people who think they're smarter than they are, and you find that? Thou art amazing, O Queen of the Minions. Gerald notes, I'm excited about, well, he says tomorrow, but I think he means Friday. I'm excited about Friday, Bob, really. After T-Rump is sworn in, I get to use my new name for him whenever he complains about somebody saying something mean about him. President Snowflake. Fitting, isn't it? That ought to twist a bunch of Trumpanzee neo-Nazis into a knot. I'll say. So here we are at the close of the filibobster. And yeah, what? Sparky, huh? a Twitter photo really from a little accordion hands Trump. By the way, go over to Huffington Post. I posted it on my Facebook page. But you'll find it at Huffington Post. Some genius video editor. You know how Trump uses his, he does this thing like his hands are a bellows and they constantly go out side to side and come in and it, right. Well, an absolute genius of a video editor edited an accordion into Trump's hands, complete with accordion sounds. That's an annoying noise. This is for the ages. Just search Trump accordion hands video. It'll pop, and you will you'll get a merry little bit of joy out of it. It's well worth your time. You can also see it on my Facebook page. Well, I understand, but I'm still praising the skill, Carol. And Carol says, what good is a news ninja if I can't pull a few rabbits out of my hat? The Dunning-Kruger effect. I'm so smart. You all are so stupid you don't know how smart I am. See? I can tie my own shoelaces. But Sparky sent me this picture from the Winter White House? I guess he's talking about Mar-a-Lago. Writing my inaugural address at the Winter White House, Mar-a-Lago, 3 weeks ago. Looking forward to Friday. Hashtag inauguration. And it's Trump holding, like, a pad of paper. And I can't tell if that's a pen or a crayon. Scowling at the camera. He's never looked more Benito-like. Gerald says, alt-right, neo-Nazis, 220, 221, whatever it takes. There's never a bad time for the Michael Keaton, Mr. Mom, whatever it takes reference. Matt in San Francisco points out, courtesy of newnownext.com, outside Mike Pence's house tonight, bring your flyest rainbow gear and your booty body-shaking skills. Christina Marusik writing, Mike Pence's notoriously anti-marriage equality, pro-conversion therapy, and generally homophobic policy positions have inadvertently wrought one small but sweet reward. Activists are planning a glitter-infused gay dance party outside of his D.C. home tonight. Pence, who once said that allowing same-sex marriage would lead to societal collapse, has already been more subtly protested. His neighbors in Chevy Chase have hung rainbow flags outside their homes, while a Pence impersonator has been collecting money for progressive charities in New York. The vice president-elect and his family plan to move to the Naval Observatory following Trump's inauguration, so tonight's fete is an unofficial send-off. The Facebook invitation says, we plan on leaving behind biodegradable glitter and rainbow paraphernalia that he can never forget. Get ready to work it and tell Daddy Pence that homotransphobia is not tolerated in our country. The party is being co-organized by WERK, W-E-R-K, for Peace, a queer collective that uses dance to promote peace, and hashtag Disrupt J20, which is planning more creative events and actions to protest the inauguration. Speaking to the Huffington Post, WERK for Peace's Firas Nassar said even before the tragedy at Pulse Nightclub, during which 49 individuals were massacred on a dance floor, nightclubs and dance served as a critical cornerstone of queer trans activism and expression. In taking dance to the streets, we use our bodies to occupy space and assert that that will embrace each other, our diversity and our differences. We will send a very clear message to Mike Pence on his doorstep. We are here, we will dance, and we refuse to tolerate bigotry and hate in this country. According to the invitation, anyone interested in joining should bring your flyest rainbow gear and your booty body shaking skills. Thanks, Matt. I imagine that will be more fun than almost anything that happens at the Godaiken inauguration. So here we are at the close of the filibuster, 15 minutes after the hour. We still have $165 to raise in for the evening to finish the, you know, for the fundraising goal for the evening. I'm paying bills to a fare-thee-well. January sucks. And so it would be great if we could just keep it up through the week. That'll be three straight weeks of meeting the fundraising goal, which will be a huge start to this little home, a home for the resistance in 2017. Oh, let's see here. If only I had access to Peter Godbold's disco DJ wisdom. After the story that Matt sent, that calls for a very special bumper. So we'll have to... I'll have to find something that works well with that last story. Just a second here. Yeah, okay. Yeah, why not? I think this will work. You're listening to listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Back in a couple of minutes, we'll start the conversation part of Conversation Radio.
You know, given that Pence is equally supportive of the idea of putting 11 million people in concentration camps and then quietly going about the business of disappearing them, wouldn't it be nice if Carlos Santana could swing by that neighborhood in Chevy Chase, Maryland, and maybe add one of those scorching guitar solos to the dance party going on? Yeah, that, of course, Dance Sister Dance from the live album Moonflower. Well, I just love it. I had several choices there. I did. But I'm a sucker for a Santana solo. So, you know, that. Okay. Let us not shilly-shally about in the least, and let's run over to line one and check in. Is that you, Flavio?
That is me, sir.
That's what I thought.
I just wanted to say, I apologize for my telephonic reticence. I have been listening avidly. I had the flu. I had two consecutive colds, and it wouldn't make any sense calling in if...
Oh, I don't know. It could be kind of fun if you called in whacked out of your mind on NyQuil. That could be enjoyable.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, yeah. Yeah, Robitussin, non-drowsy Mike.
Jesus, it's all, the sky's gone all paisley. And the walls are breathing.
Exactly. I mean, talk about Salvador Dali landscapes.
Yeah, right there in your very own bedroom.
Woo-hoo, yeah. I have some prints of his on my wall. I won't tell you which. I'll let you guess. I must say, okay, in no particular order, I'd like to treat authoritarianism, my history with it, Catharism, purity, Dunning-Kruger effect, humility, introspection.
Pick one and run.
In no particular order.
Yeah, pick one and run.
You wouldn't mind me rambling on and filiflobstering for like maybe 5 minutes.
It take off. We'll
okay.
See where the conversation takes us.
First of all,
I personally am intrigued by Catharism, but never mind.
A little rendering onto Caesar. I'm still recovering from, among other things, the fact that Betsy DeVos's brother is Eric Prince.
Brother-in-law. I'm not sure if we got that completely sorted out, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, okay.
You know, and with those billionaire families, it's very much like that little village in North Georgia in Deliverance. I mean, you know, you're my sister, you're my cousin. You know, it's all in the family as long as the money doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it's not a family tree, it's a stump.
Right, exactly.
A strump. Okay, so I'm still getting over the accordion and...
Was that not just delightful? I know you saw it.
I'm just dying. I nearly swallowed my tongue.
That may actually, Flavio, be the metaphor for the presidency. What we need, whoever that guy is, somebody needs to give him a paying gig and just let him take every instant in which... in which Trump speaks as president of the United States, and just add in that accordion. It makes it so much better.
Yeah, more palatable. And then your quip tonight, that's the rendering unto Caesar part, inspired. Did you come up with this on the fly? Trump, he still thinks emoluments are something he rubs on Russian hookers before they go pee-pee.
That's mine. That is entirely mine, Flavio. Can I have a cowbell for that?
Did you just... No, you get three. Did you just come up with that on the fly?
I've had it for a couple of days now, but yeah.
Oh, God. I know. It's like one of those things at 3 a.m. and you have a notepad by your bedside like in that movie, Argentinian movie, The Secret in Their Eyes, so you can write down, you know, it's Freudian. It's like, it's Salvador Dali's paranoia critical method, where you just sit down, and my late English teacher in World War II, Navy veteran of the Pacific, and civil rights activist, black literature professor Jim, taught me to write down my dreams in a dream log.
I've done that from time to time, and it could get really interesting.
But you've got to
catch them when they're fresh. I mean, you've got to be about semi-conscious anyway when you wake up. And the thing is, when they're really nasty, horrifying dreams, you just sort of kind of give them new life by writing them down. And it's like, oh, I'm not laying back down. Not now that I've thought about that shit. No way. That little bastard's going to come back out from under the bed and get me this time. Cathars, please. I want to point this out, Flavio. I'm willing to bet that there is not a single radio show in the entire country where anybody has brought up the cathars today. I mean, we used to get a note from time to time from Ron in Raleigh, in his best Rush Limbaugh, where he'd say, "My friends, today on the Excellence in Broadcasting Network, a discussion of the cathars and purity in American politics." It don't happen.
Well, you know, I was raised by Jesuits, so I do have quite the intellectual background by progressive Jesuits, by the way.
Well, and speaking of which, one of the
like the people that write for America.
No, I get that, but there's a I'm not Roman Catholic, but I have some of my best friends are Roman Catholic, and they tell me jokes, especially Jesuit educated Roman Catholics.
Well, I am Catholic.
Well, I know. So
I still am.
Right, so...
Even though I go atheist on some days.
So a Jesuit and a Benedictine are talking one day.
Go ahead.
Yeah, a Jesuit and a Benedictine are talking one day, and the Jesuit says, why was your order founded? And the Benedictine says, we were founded to rid the world of the Albigensian heresy. How about you? And the Jesuit says, "Well, we were founded to rid the world of the Protestant heresy." And then a third priest leans over and says, "Yeah, you know what the difference is between the Jesuits and the Benedictines?" "Oh no, you don't see a bunch of Albigensians running around anymore now, do you?"
Okay. My pop.
There aren't a lot of Jesuit jokes out there, okay? I mean, you got to capitalize when you get them.
No, but I'm actually secretly a Waldensian. I believe that in order to be a true Christian, God must not exist, so you can't use God as a crutch, or the goddess, or whoever, the prime mover.
No. If you use the goddess of irony as a crutch, you will quickly find out the crutch is rubber.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so, you know, I was thinking, you know, it's like, you know, you have to wonder about people that are always mentioning their faith. I don't. I scrupulously eschew mentioning my faith in most contexts. Not in this radio show, because it's relevant. Okay? But I never naturalized. I live here. I'm a permanent resident alien. I keep my antennae safely tucked behind my ears so as not to frighten the locals.
Beep, 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 beep.
But the whole thing is, like, you know, authoritarianism. I had an authoritarian father, even though he was very progressive, very left of center. He was still a male chauvinist. You know, he wanted his wife at home. He was a sole breadwinner, and he occasionally gave us strafings when I was growing up. And then when I was entrusted, being the eldest of six, with the care of my siblings, I took it out on them. And to this day, I am apologizing for having struck them and forever having been that way. It's hereditary, but I've curbed that for the better part of 30 years now, and I am totally against corporal punishment. I think that the only thing that you teach a child when you do that is that might makes right. And that is not something I want to teach a child. And so to this day, I have this blot that I have to live with. And I have a couple of siblings that don't even talk to me because they still remember that and never forgave me. But I continually reach out and apologize and remember their birthdays and, but it takes, something of the training that I had. What they teach in Catholic school, the examination of conscience? It takes a certain amount of introspection not to be, kind of like Senator Byrd, okay? Robert Byrd?
Oh, yes.
I'm sure he probably went through a dark night of the soul when he realized what an asshole he was or had been.
He apologized at every opportunity for his dalliance with the Klan. There's no doubt about it.
To my dying day, I will be apologizing for having been an authoritarian. But it took a great amount of introspection, and that takes care of the authoritarianism part, and probably the Dunning-Kruger effect comment as well. It takes humility and introspection, and even though I'm very learned in everything, I still realize every day that I don't know diddly squat.
Beginning of wisdom and all that.
And that anybody that's lived an hour more, it's an Arabic proverb, I'm paraphrasing, anybody that's lived an hour more than I have knows that much more than I do. Okay?
Yeah.
Which takes care of also the ageism in this country, possibly the racism, sexism, homophobia, everything, anybody that's had a different experience than I've had knows that much more than I do. And so I'm always continually humbled by being continually humbled.
That makes sense. I actually, I get it.
And I know that sounds like a tautology, but it isn't. It is like, it's a realization. It's like, like one of those, the realizations that you come upon, when you do some really good shrooms, no, but seriously. And so we come to Catharism, okay? The Albigensian heresy and everything. Rick Sanctimoniorum, what did you say? Sanctum Sanctorum?
Sanctum Sanctorum, yes.
Sanctum Sanctorum, Holy of Holies. Rick is about as Catholic as
Oh, no, he's more Catholic than Pope Frank, just ask him, he'll tell you.
Yeah, and and the church has evolved? It used to be that suicides couldn't be buried in consecrated ground. I had a wonderful, lovely friend in high school, Andy. And he was a depressive, a terrible depressive. He would sit down with a bottle of Jack Daniels and, or no, Jim Beam, I think it was.
No, sorry, just got the full, full body shudders at the mention.
He was like 6'4", 6'5", or something like that, and gaunt and skinny as Ichabod Crane. Okay?
Yeah.
And we would laugh at him, you know, because he would sit down and polish off that bottle in a sitting. No, in one gulp. And we thought that was funny, and we egged him on and everything. And so one day he took his father's 12-gauge, placed it in his mouth, and pulled the trigger. And every day, my friends and I visit the mausoleum, and we never saw it coming. Why did I mention that? Humility. The ability to realize one's mistakes and be better people because of it. And then, so, narcissists, men children, I should say. Like that orange shit stain, don't have that, you know, because they worship authoritarianism. And to this day, I just run from it like freaking bubonic plague. I can't stand that in myself, above all, and in others. And so catharism, purity. I was thinking about what you and Carol wrote. I'm tired of the blame game as well. I'm tired of the blame game, and I think that the calamity that befell us on November the 8th does not allow for blame. We have to gear up and educate people and start fighting for 2018 to misparaphrase Tennyson, now is not the reason why, now is but to resist or die.
Very nicely paraphrased.
And we're in a bad way, and we can't afford to be purists or catharsis. And getting back to Rick Santorum and his professional Catholicism as opposed to professed. And I'm quoting Mark Twain as, you know, what he said about, you know, in Letter to the Earth, or about, you know, that coal dealer in New York.
Yeah, is that Letters from the Earth?
Letter to the Earth, you know, the recording angel. You know.
Okay, now you've got me curious.
How the coal dealer in fucking Ithaca, or no, was it upstate New York? What's that? Ithaca? New York? How that coal dealer started out life as a professing Christian and ended life as a professional Christian. He was such a miser. You can look it up.
Yeah, I am right now. Letters from the Earth.
Letter to the Earth.
From.
The recording angel.
Did he do a letter to the earth and a letter from the earth?
Yeah, a letter to the earth, yeah.
Because I keep getting letters from the earth.
No, letter to the earth.
Okay, let's find that. Okay, there it is. Yeah, there's one. There's one of each. Or there's each. Letters to the Earth and Letters from the Earth.
Letter to the Earth, the Recording Angel, the Google algorithm will catch it.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, Abner Schofield, coal dealer,
Abner
Buffalo, New York.
Abner Schofield,
yeah.
Buffalo, New York. Is my memory okay?
Yep, Buffalo, New York. I have the honor, as per command, to inform you that your recent act of benevolence and self-sacrifice has been recorded upon a page of the book called Golden Deeds of Men, a distinction I am permitted to remark, which is not merely extraordinary, it is unique. As regards your prayers for the week ending the 19th, I have the honor to report as follows. 1. For weather to advance hard coal 15 cents a ton, granted. For influx of laborers to reduce wages 10%, granted. For a break in rival soft coal prices, granted. For a visitation upon the man or upon the family of the man who has set up a competing retail coal yard in Rochester, granted as follows. Diphtheria 2, 1 fatal, scarlet fever 1, to result in deafness and imbecility. Note, this prayer should have been directed against this subordinate's principals, the New York Central Railroad Company. For deportation to Sheol of annoying swarms of persons who apply daily for work or for favors of one sort or another, taken under advisement for later decision and compromise, this petition appearing to conflict with another one of same date, which will be cited further along. Yes.
Yeah, it's only two pages, but it's beautiful. It is beautiful. So, yeah, people like him are professional Christians.
Exactly. I love paragraph 9. For Cyclone, to destroy the works and fill up the mine of the North Pennsylvania Company. Note, Cyclones are not kept in stock in the winter season. A reliable article of fire damp can be furnished upon application. A special note is made of the above list, they being a particular moment. The 298 remaining supplications classifiable under the head of Special Providences Schedule A for week ending 19th are granted in a body, except that 3 of the 32 cases requiring immediate death have been modified to incurable disease.
You understand why I adore American literature.
I really can't, because I come at it as, you know, my native patrimony, so... are you saying that there aren't any Twains in Portuguese?
Oh no, there are. But I'm just saying, if I were Generalissimo Flavio and I were dictator of the United States, this would be required reading, so that we wouldn't fall victims to shysters like Pence. You know, the orange one, or anybody else, or Billy Graham, for fuck's sake.
Yes.
And yes, the Constitution is a secular document. There are no religious litmus tests for holding public office. There are competence tests. Are you sound of mind and body? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. No, they knew of which they spoke. I mean, we could spend an entire week, and God knows Dr. Bill has, deconstructing the shortcomings of the Constitution. But
I read the Federalists. I read the Federalist Papers.
But the I have no doubt. But the thing is, it is a document for the advancement of self-government. It is not a document for the salvation of souls. That's called the Bible, or the Torah, or the Quran, or the Rig Veda, or the Bhagavad Gita,
exactly. Or
the Diamond Sutra, or the Sunflower Sutra, or whatever it is the Zoroastrians prefer.
The Quran.
Of those things are not frameworks for fucking government. The Constitution is.
Absolutely. And it's a living document.
In the great hereafter, one of these days, maybe you can take it up with dead old Tony as to whether it's living or dead.
Yeah. No, I don't I may spend some time in purgatory, but I don't think the devil would accept me.
Well, you...
I'm too wise to old scratch. Right?
Well, I will take you at your word on that, Flavio.
And you know, I'm beginning to hate Julian Assange too. You know why?
Oh, I don't hate him. I don't waste that much energy on him.
No. You know why? Because if you really believe in your convictions, you're willing to go to prison for them. Like Chelsea Manning.
Well, you got to understand, Assange. Julian Assange. Julian Assange needed Chelsea Manning to go to prison because that was then great for Julian Assange in terms of his ongoing PR campaign in advancement of the awesomeness of Julian Assange.
Yeah. You notice I don't call in that much. I don't like to show off.
You know,
I don't like to speak.
Well, you do a lovely job when you do. But I'm just, you know, there's always been something about Julian Assange that made me kind of go, yeah, I don't know. And what we've seen in the last, in the last year or so, is a degree of partisanship that puts the lie to the entire operating philosophy of WikiLeaks. Okay? I mean, when Russian dissidents, all right, when Pussy Riot says that Julian Assange is a tool of pooty-poot,
that's saying something.
I'm going to listen to Pussy Riot. It's kind of like when the Greens in Russia said that Jill Stein was no friend to them. I paid attention.
Yeah, me too. I know. It took me a while. I apologize. I'm just of
a little
skeptical bent. Because I grew up outside of the United States, and I was subjected to the other side of the coin, which is American propaganda and American interference in our elections. And you have to admit that too. Right?
Well, sure. But, you know, two wrongs don't make a right, but two rights did make an airplane.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I never meant that.
Absolutely it's not. You don't have to say it's okay for us to do it, but not okay for others to do it to us. That's intellectually dishonest.
That's what I was saying. That's what I meant. And some, you know, I'm not ascribing purity of motives anywhere. Every nation does it. Some for better, some for worse, but every nation has a spy agency, even Switzerland.
Yeah. And everybody spies on everybody else. One of the telling things, and I haven't really mentioned this on the program, Flavio, but I think it fits in the overall tenor of this conversation. One of the most telling things I found is that, so one of the campaign things one of the things he campaigned on is how unbelievably incredible our relationships with Israel is going to be after I get to be president. And yet, there are at least, you know, decent working relationships between Israeli intel and American intel. And so they're sitting down over a plate of hummus.
Not always.
But they sat down over a plate of hummus, and they came to the conclusion that, no, Israeli intel really shouldn't be passed and back and forth, because there was every reason in the world to believe that any intel that Israel shared would wind up in Russia and be immediately transmitted to Iran. And, of course, all you have to do is say Iran in Israel, and they all scream, Bruga, 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 aye, nuclear weapons, we've got 200, they don't have any, but they're a threat. But it is still telling to me, if you step back into some, you know, into a little bit of intellect, put a little bit of intellectual space between it, it's amazing to me that they're having those conversations at all. Look, you know, I mean, listen, Jer, I like you and everything, but I don't think we can pass information back and forth the way we used to, because, you know, the guy that, I mean, we didn't like the Schwarze or anything, but, you know, this guy, he's a Russian tool. So, you know, it's nothing personal.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. And, you know, Jimmy Carter called Israel an apartheid state. And that's true, too. Because of the Likud. But I also know that Haaretz, their New York Times, there's more democracy in that newspaper than there is in the New York Times.
Oh, there's more open discussion about Israel and more dissent tolerated about Israel, inside Israel, than is tolerated in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, you know... Yeah, and it's amazing that, you know, and I wish I knew Hebrew, because I would, but fortunately, Haaretz is translated into English, but I'm always reading, you know,
there's a shitstorm coming over there, too.
I'm not Sir Richard Francis Burden, 19th century British spy who knew 29 languages, only white guy ever to have visited Mecca and never gotten killed. I read his biography. I can't remember the author now, but it was like a 600, 700 page book. Amazing.
No, a fascinating character. I know of whom you speak.
Yeah.
But what I was pointing toward, Flavio, one of the things, and we haven't, you know, we've been kind of laser beam focused on, you know, a few tens of millions of people losing their health care, but there's other stuff at work. Rafael Lito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger eating future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man forgot to be American for a very long time, Dean Heller and Marco Rubio all got together and they introduced something in the Congress last week called the Jerusalem Embassy and Recognition Act.
Oh, elucidate me.
They intend to pass a law recognizing Jerusalem as the official capital of Israel and compelling the government to move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. This, by the way, is supported by Trump.
Oh, lovely.
Now, people who actually know the situation on the ground have pointed out that doing something so unutterably stupid,
odious,
that too, will, of course, trigger a massive wave of violence and throw the whatever sad little bleeding remnants of the Israeli-Palestinian peace process exist into absolute...
Sidereal space.
Yes. Just gone. Over.
Done.
Rafael Lito said, Jerusalem is the eternal and undivided capital of Israel. Unfortunately, the Obama administration's vendetta against the Jewish state has been so vicious that to even utter this simple truth, let alone the reality that Jerusalem is the appropriate venue for the American embassy in Israel, is shocking in some circles, but it's finally time to cut through the doublespeak and broken promises and do what Congress said we should do in 1995, formally move our embassy to the capital of the great ally, Israel.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, vendetta and viciousness. How would you feel about $38 billion worth of vicious vendetta? Because apparently, when that one in our White House gets his vicious vendetta on against Israel, he gives him $38 billion.
Oh, my God. No, I have no words.
Little Marco, not to be outdone, or outpandered, I suppose is the word we're looking for, said, Jerusalem is the eternal capital of the Jewish state of Israel, and that's where America's embassy belongs. It's time for Congress and the president-elect to eliminate the loophole that has allowed presidents in both parties to ignore U.S. law and delay our embassy's rightful relocation to Jerusalem for over two decades. See, here's how it works, Flavia. These clowns know what they're doing. They move the embassy to Jerusalem, and then some aggrieved Palestinians or allies blow it into a million tiny pieces. That then gives the Israelis casus belli to go ahead and finish the Palestinian genocide. Problem solved.
Kind of like what started World War One.
I was thinking more Reichstag fire, but that's okay.
And plunged the world into two ghastly wars.
But that's okay, because Israel attacked Syria last week, and, you know, what the hell, why not? What fun are missiles and bombs if you're not using them?
Yeah, and the dude said that, you know, the orange shit stain said that, you know, what good is nuclear weapons if we can't use them?
He did, didn't he?
He did. Along with telling the rubes, I like the poorly
I love the poorly educated, yes.
I love the poorly educated. That's why, when I become dictator, education is going to be federalized, and fuck states' rights. You're going to have a core that every fucking state in the union, world history, American history, biology, science, the works.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's gonna. That sounds like a common core.
A common core. Everything except religion. Unless you want me to teach all of the world's thousand religions.
Well, if we do that, we're not going to have a lot of time for chemistry and biology and things like that.
No, exactly. So fuck that. Fuck that. So no. No, I would stand behind a dictator like that any day.
Well, I got a problem standing behind dictators.
No, but a benevolent one is a
like you, I understand the classical meaning of tyrant and dictator. Tyrant coming from Greek and dictator coming from Latin. And especially as regards dictators, the Romans had this notion that every once in a while a situation would arise which their preferred political system was not capable of addressing.
A Cincinnatus.
Right.
Somebody that takes care of business and then goes back to the plow.
And dictator is simply a Latinate term meaning a speaker or one who speaks, one whose word is law.
Takes care of business and goes back to the plow.
And puts down chaos. But then they found out under Sulla that it can be a terrible thing that is largely a vehicle for retributive monetary acquisition. The proscription lists, if you go back and you read your ancient Roman history, the only people I think who can begin to comprehend what Sulla's proscriptions were like are people who were subjected to the horrors of the Third Reich. Because Sulla would put these lists of people's names on it, and invariably they were people with money who he deemed to be his political enemies. And once they were published, those people all had a bounty on their heads. So anybody could go and murder them, prove that they had been liquidated, their funds, their estates would escheat to Sulla, and then they would be paid a bounty for taking care of the prescribed person and getting them out of the way. Sulla wasn't the only one who used them. Later on, when Mark Antony, Octavian, and Labienus, was it? Pulled together the second triumvirate. They used proscription lists too. And that's how Cicero got his tongue and hands nailed up in the forum.
Oh, yeah. I need to go back to my Mommsen, my Theodore Mommsen Baikalian text, History of Rome. I had to read that. I had this Dr. Gene Heliason, amazing historian from the University of Wisconsin, who taught me Roman history, medieval history, world history. She was amazing. But you know what? She made us, her class was a two book of the week club. We had to read reams upon reams upon reams. This was 30 years ago. We had to read, you know, and when I went back and taught for a while, I taught I tried to teach high school. That didn't work out. And then I taught college for four semesters. And I found out how, even at a private school, the standards had declined. And I was like, holy shit.
They
complain about
rigor,
reading.
The idea of intellectual and academic rigor changes from one generation to the next. You mentioned having read the Federalist Papers.
I had a Republican teacher.
Yeah, but you mentioned reading the Federalist Papers. Madison and Hamilton are not easy to read, even for longtime practitioners of the art of word knowing like you and me. Because they wrote in a Ciceronian sentence structure that, you know, is line after line after line after line of dependent clauses and independent clauses and
subordinate clauses.
Subordinate clauses and subjunctives and gerunds and all those horrifying things that I've tried to forget from Latin 3. But you can get through it. The difference, and it's a great experiment sometime if you want to do it, it partakes, from a literary standpoint, it partakes of like being on acid. Sit down and read a page of Hemingway, and then read a page of Dickens. And then read a page of Faulkner, and then read a page of Thomas Hardy.
Yeah.
The difference is, and you know, with your hero Twain, and my hero Twain, the same thing obtains. Twain writes in a Victorian style that is far more reminiscent of Dickens than of anything that would come after.
Absolutely.
And that's because the ideas of academic and intellectual rigor change with the generations. Flavio, it has been a magnificent conversation. I got a roll here because I got people, you know, these things happen and it engenders other people to want to say things. So
oh,
the phone
absolutely.
Starts ringing.
No, I don't want to monopolize. I apologize if I have.
Oh, you didn't. It's been a lovely conversation. Like I said, you own the signal honor of being the only person in talk radio in the entire United States to bring up the Cathars in conversation in a radio program. And for that, you should be applauded.
Cowbell.
Damn straight, Cowbell.
I love you.
All right, you take care, Flavia.
I love Carol Baker.
Absolutely. We all worship at the shrine.
We should all get a room together.
We'll see you, Flavio.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Flavio calling from Wisconsin. All right, let's check in with John in Central PA. Hey, John.
Hey, Bob. How you doing tonight?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm good. I'm feeling some, anxiety. I'm like, because of the inauguration coming up. Let's just say I'm like legitimately scared.
I'm not okay. Dramatic. And no, I don't think you are being. And let's just say, let me just establish this sort of baseline. That's okay.
Okay.
fear of the unknown is okay. And maybe the antidote to that is to remember FDR saying all we have to fear is fear itself. I don't think FDR right. would say that in 2017. He'd look at Trump and go, holy shit. I can't believe this guy comes from the same state I did.
Yeah, really. It's incredible. It's so ridiculous, And then it's just one disappointment after another, Like he spent the weekend attacking, John Lewis, a civil rights hero. And then come Monday, what happens? The very man that John Lewis fought for the civil rights with, Martin Luther King Jr.'s own son, went to Trump Tower to, meet with that degenerate.
Normalize him.
Yeah. And then says, well, we talked about voter rights, which, by the way, we know, everybody knows, that they suppressed the votes. They're a complete antithesis of voting rights. They're so against voting rights. And then he said, and I think Trump's intents are good. What? He was at a rally, on his disgusting victory tour and said and thanked black people for not voting after they were purged off of their rolls.
Absolutely.
He thanked them, for not.
I would not have known this had I not caught Mike Malloy that evening. But there were in regard to that meeting of Marty King, Martin Luther King III, they call him Marty, with Trump. Had I not been listening to Malloy, I would not have known that he does not enjoy a great deal of respect inside the civil rights community.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. I did catch that on Malloy's show. He's kind of like either he's money hungry. Is that kind of where that comes from?
Yeah, they're selling off everything, and they've tried to. Hell, they tried to copyright the I Have a Dream speech so they'd get paid every time somebody played a clip.
Right. And luckily that some judge somewhere had enough sense to say, nope, that's part of history. If you want to make money off of it, make your own speech. Make your own damn speech that ends up being that iconic. I had no idea because there's two or three kids of hit. Two of the kids, I guess, weren't respected in the civil rights inner circle. But I do know that his one daughter spoke at the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, this year, and I guess did a prayer or some ceremony for Hillary Clinton or something. I don't know if that was the Reverend, the daughter of his that's actually.
Well, and then there's the great niece or niece or whatever, the Reverend Velveeta King.
Right.
And she's obsessed with the precious little fetuses and has trafficked on her last name to get herself a cushy spot inside the wing nutosphere.
Right, and she lives on Fox News.
Right.
One of the first shows the first episodes of yours that I listened to was actually, I think it was the night before Thanksgiving. That was like one of the very first episodes that I was that I ever heard of yours and of your show. And I remember you were playing clips of her, and I had to get the hockey puck. I mean, I just...
Mine has a lot of tooth marks. I mean, it's okay.
I never heard that before. I like that. I like that. Get the hockey puck. It's so true. It's like every time you say that, it's like, oh, God, what is it now? What fresh horror awaits us now, you know?
What fresh hell is this?
Right. And it's every day is a hockey puck day. It really is. I mean, and
I got one for tonight. You want to have some fun with hockey pucks? I got one for you.
Oh God.
And this is non-political. It's not even prayer meeting Wednesday religious.
Oh, okay.
This just comes from the realm of Jesus Christ, how stupid are we? And I'm gonna we're gonna need some help from the female membership of the Horn Family Community Congregation, because this has to do with things that I can't, you know, I just don't have the experiential base with which to deal with it. I've mentioned on a number of occasions that when I notice it and I think about it, I really, really resent the degree to which women are marketed at. And I wonder if we spend enough time acknowledging that there is a sexism in marketing that is absolutely vicious and brutal toward women. Whether it's fashion or cosmetics or any of that. If I go, you know, I need a new suit. Okay. Let's say I need a new suit. I go somewhere that sells men's suits and I can get a black one with pinstripes or a blue one with pinstripes or a charcoal one with pinstripes or a gray one with pinstripes. I can get two or three buttons on the jacket. Maybe I can get a vest. Double-breasted suits are out for the time being. But there's not a whole lot of choice there. I mean, do I want pleats in the pants? Do I want cuffs? Do I want a break? But it's nothing compared. If I were a woman, I would lose my mind just trying to get dressed.
Yeah.
And this isn't, I mean, this isn't me trying. I'm not making fun. It's
right.
Hard goddamn work.
It is, because they got to compete with all the other women.
And the men.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so enter Gwyneth Paltrow.
Okay.
This ain't from The Onion. This is not a joke. Over at her website, which is apparently called Goop. She is
Paltrow, the older one.
Gwyneth, no, I mean, you know, Shakespeare in Love. You know, but she's hustling something called the Jade Egg. And, of course, it's ridiculously expensive. And it's a piece of jade in the shape of an egg.
What's a jade?
Jade, you know, jade is a gemstone, semi-precious, you know. It's porous. It was revered in, say, Mesoamerican culture and Asian cultures. And this jade egg, a woman is supposed to pay a princely ransom for it and insert it in her vagina.
Wow. Whoa.
And in the pitch for the jade egg, they explain, Gwyneth Paltrow's company explains it will harness the power of energy work, crystal healing, and a Kegel-like physical practice.
Wow. Like I'm speechless. I mean,
it's a cooter crystal.
Yeah,
as we would say here in Trumpalacha.
Right, and that's supposed to be, like a form of jewelry? I mean, like, what is she getting at with that?
Like, what's the purpose?
Well, it's gonna harness the energies of crystals and bring and focus. Oh, it's crazy. So enter an OBGYN named Dr. Jen.
Oh, is her name Dr. Jennifer Gunter?
Yes.
Okay, she's real young.
Well, she's not too keen on the jade hoo hoo egg. She says, "All I can tell you is it's the biggest load of garbage I've read on your site since vaginal steaming. It's even worse than claiming bras cause cancer. But hey, you aren't one to let facts get in the way of profiting from snake oil."
And she said that?
She said, "Nothing says female empowerment more than the only reason to do this is for your man." But she said, no, it's not going to balance your hormones. She said, that's biologically impossible. And she said, when it comes to the claim that the jade egg can increase energy, Dr. Gunter says, how does one test for it? Organically sourced fair trade urine pH sticks coming soon to Goop for $77, I presume.
That doctor said that?
Yeah. And then over on Paltrow's website, it also says, the word for our womb, yoni, translates as sacred place, and it is a sacred place. It's where many women access their intuition, their power, and their wisdom. It's this inner sanctum that we can access when it's not in use, creating life. Dr. Gunter did not much care for this either, John. She said, if you're using the Sanskrit, while I admit I'm no language scholar, it seems that yoni means the entire female reproductive tract, and you should say that. Terminology aside, the vulva, vagina, cervix, and uterus are not intuition repositories, and neither are they sources of power or wisdom. In fact, I find that assertion insulting. Do you really mean a woman who does not have a uterus is less effective? Is a woman without a vagina less intelligent? Is a woman who had a vulvectomy due to cancer less creative?
That's a good point. That's a really, really good point.
Wow. And then Agnes is listening through the wall, and she said, "That's it. No more Gwyneth Paltrow movies."
She was in Back to or Meet the Parents, right? Is that the lady we're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, yeah, and okay. Shakespeare in Love, and oh, what was that movie? Well, never mind. But the worst part of it is that Dr. Gunter.
There's a worst part.
Yeah, Dr. Gunter notes that they're encouraging women to take this jade egg and keep it inside of them for extended periods of time. And she notes that jade is a porous stone and can therefore harbor bacteria, which are then introduced into the vagina and could act like a fomite. And the article I'm looking at just says, you know, kind of like a smallpox blanket inside a woman, inside a woman's vagina.
Oh my gosh, man. Wow. They're that hard up for money or something. Or she's gotten to be that much of a whack job that she's going to do. So it's basically, harmful to the woman, first of all.
I introduced all this as an example of a hockey puck worthy story.
And it's a great one, too, because it's cringe worthy, but it's not like one of those hockey puck stories that has something to do with. Well, I thought you were going to tell me that she's going to the inauguration. You know what I mean? Like, whether Paltrow going to inauguration. And instead, it's actually kind of worse, you know? And it's not one that's, like, it's bad, but it's not one that's going to stress.
Well, I mean, I'm just guessing politics. Here. Based on the minor conniption that I'm getting through the wall of the studio here, I'm guessing that people like Tracy and Carol and a few others are out there just, no, damn it, no.
Yeah, because like you said, we don't know anything about, well, I don't know what it's like to be a woman. So, you know, I guess it'd be like the equivalent of somebody saying, here, right, here's a piercing for, you know, not to get, you know, vulgar, not vulgar, but like a piercing for your penis or something. You know what I mean? You don't say it like.
No, see, you don't get to say that because then I have to like go, ow.
Right. It probably doesn't take a doctor to tell somebody that that's not healthy. That doesn't sound very healthy. Who knows where that thing has been, you know? Who knows who handled it when they made it in the wherever the hell it's made? I can't believe that a woman, somebody like Gwyneth Paltrow would come up with something like that. You know,
well, Jack in Shreveport, I think Jack in Shreveport just distilled it to its basic essence. It's like the pet rock for the P word.
Right. And then Trump, it just gives Trump an excuse to grab at it. You know, oh, what's that?
Hey, you got a jade. Yeah. You got a jade egg up there, honey? Oh, I just love the jade egg. I like going for jade Easter egg hunts.
Oh, nice. And next thing you know, he'll be giving that to all the interns in the White House. Wow. I've never heard of something like that. I've seen the Dr. Jen on Twitter. She's all over Twitter, you know. I think she's a contributor at the Huffington Post or something.
Oh, this was the first I'd heard of her. I'm glad you're familiar with her work. It sounds like she's an intelligent, no bullshit, kind of decent practitioner of medicine.
Oh yeah, and she's relatively young too. I know she's originally from Canada. As if it's the same doctor we're talking about. Are you familiar? Do you have a picture of her?
No, I do not.
You know what she looks like?
No.
Well, I would say I'm pretty sure it's the same doctor I'm thinking of. She's a fairly young woman. She's very progressive. She is originally from Canada, and I think she practices medicine. Well, she can practice. She's certified to practice medicine in Canada and the U.S. And well, she's been speaking out against the Republicans trying to take away, you know, the Affordable Care Act and stuff because she's in the inner circle of the medical industry. She knows the havoc it's going to wreak upon that community. Well, not community, but industry, whatever you want to call it, the medical, I'm trying to think of the right word for it. But, you know, she's been speaking out against that. And lately she's been pretty much, because I saw her on Twitter and I started following her. In fact, remember the letter that came from Trump's weird doctor, that guy?
The doctor who just coincidentally happens to write exactly like Trump speaks. Yeah, that guy? Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, she wrote on Huffington, did an article on Huffington, on Huffington Post about pretty much just picking apart that letter and saying, breaking it down like this. You don't say, he's using the wrong medical term for that. You don't say positive. Like, I forget what the specifics of it were, but the way they, and if you really read the article, you think, oh yeah, she's right. Doctors don't talk like that, you know? And she's pretty much all over the progressive side. She's like the progressive's very own doctor, which is really cool.
Oh, cool. You know? All right.
Yeah. She's very progressive and she's basically what a good asset to, well, the resistance, basically. And so, yeah, she writes good articles. I think mostly on the Huffington Post. I think there's a couple other, like, doctors-type publications, like, specifically for doctors, and that she writes for, too. And so, yeah, where'd you see that ever? On Twitter, or?
I just ran across a story over at Raw Story.
Oh, okay. Raw Story, that's a pretty good source. I like Raw Story. They're pretty good. Because nowadays,
I respect the fact that they will give you a link to the original document. And then you can go and sort it out for yourself.
Yeah. And they're pretty progressive, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, progressive and objective. And, like, they, believe it or not, are, you know, they talk about the Russian stuff, you know, unlike other progressives, not progressives, but people who claim to be progressives that are really starting to get on my nerves, who act like they're so pure and everything, like Glenn Greenwald, that denies everything and sticks up for the dictator Putin. Everybody knows he's a dictator. Not to get off topic or anything, but you know it gives back to people like that. One of the things I was gonna bring up to you today is I am starting to get a little bit tired of some of the so-called the real progressives. You know, the ones that claim to be real progressives. You know, those kind of guys. I was like the so-called Bernie bro types. You know what I mean? Like I was all for Bernie. I still am. I support Bernie very much. But some of the people that claim to be Bernie supporters who keep saying stuff like, "Well, I'd rather have Trump than Hillary Clinton," and
that's just privilege. That's all that is.
Right. It's all white males that do it. You know, I don't know why.
I don't know that we can say all. But no, there's just there's a wing of so-called progressivism that is their benchmark is the fact that they are so ideologically pure that they could never stoop to actually winning an election. Because in order to win elections, you have to form coalitions and you have to compromise and you have to have money and it's a clip straight out of Bugs Bunny. You know, how many times have I told you not to handle the filthy money? they'll have their ideological purity to keep them warm.
Yeah, because the problem with it is they don't realize, and you know stuff, you recognize this, and a couple other people do, and I'm sure the Horn family community congregation, they realize this too. Progressive, they're serving to do is enabling the fascists, and the only resistance that I see them offering is resistance against the Democratic Party. So if that's their prerogative, but the fact of the matter is the Democratic Party is basically the only hope of standing in the way of these Republicans. That's their opposition, it's the Democratic
Party.
Well,
the Greens sure proved themselves kind of ineffective in that regard now, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing about the Greens is you don't see them.
They're gone. You won't hear from them again until 2020.
Right, and that's what pisses me off to no end.
And then, four years later with the country in a smoking heap of rubble, they'll be back to say, "Well, see, at least you didn't get Hillary."
Yeah.
Goldman Sachs!
Did you see that picture of Flynn sitting beside Putin at a table that was an event for RT?
Oh, yeah.
And There's a picture, and I don't know for sure if it's Jill Stein, but it looks like her from the.
I'm pretty sure she was there. She's gone over and played footsie with Putin a couple of times.
Oh yeah, yeah, and it's like RT. I had another meeting with the local progressives in my town because a couple of us are going to be actually running for office. And trying to get some real progressives from the ground up, and I think some of them are finally starting to come around. With last time I talked to them, a couple of them still didn't believe the Russian stuff, and now they do. And
well, look, I mean, it's
and I don't want to, I'm not trying to practice ageism here, but once upon a time, there was this guy named Bill Clinton, and he was a horn dog, and he liked to have sex outside of his marriage, and and when it became a thing that the Republicans could wrap their sex-obsessed minds around, they talked about the drip, drip, drip effect, that there was just always something new about, you know, the sexual peccadilloes of Bill Clinton and the Whitewater. Blah, blah, blah. You know, there was never any there. The guy, you know, the guy fooled around on his wife. And that was between, right. that was for him and his wife to sort out, just like any other couple would. You stay together if you stay together for a variety of reasons. If you split up, you split up for a different set of reasons. But but he and Hillary decided to stay together. Good God, she's the devil! Well, the drip, drip, drip is back. But apparently the Purity Brigade doesn't want to hear any part of it. McClatchy is reporting today that a total of 6 different law enforcement and intelligence agencies have been working together for months on end looking into Russian attempts to influence the election, and they are also investigating whether money, this is directly from the Peter Stone, Greg Gordon article by McClatchy, whether money from the Kremlin covertly aided President-elect Donald Trump, according to 2 people familiar with the matter. It's the FBI, the CIA, the National Security Agency, the Justice Department, the Treasury Department's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, and representatives of the Director of National Intelligence. In particular, John, they're examining how money, and again, this is directly from the article, how money may have moved from the Kremlin to covertly help Trump win. One of the allegations involves whether a system for routinely paying thousands of Russian-American pensioners may have been used to pay some email hackers in the United States or to supply money to intermediaries who would then pay the hackers.
Follow the money.
Well, that is what Deep Throat said back in the Watergate days. Follow the money.
And the Republican Party, it's like they turned they turned a blind eye to it, and they just ignore, you know, like things like that. They don't want to do anything about it. And it doesn't surprise me if that's collusion right there.
This is an inquiry that's being pursued in part because of the fact that his former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, was identified as a Russian money bag man.
Right. And didn't he, like, organize some kind of, like, or something in the Ukraine?
Right, right. But, oh, my God, Hillary gave speeches to Goldman Sachs. Jesus Christ.
Right, exactly.
I want to be clear. I'm not being hypocritical about this, because I criticized her for the Goldman Sachs speeches. I particularly criticized her for not releasing the transcripts and taking control of the narrative. You know, she went into Goldman Sachs and told them that they all shit ice cream, and that their farts smell like rose water. Which is, when you're getting paid that kind of money, what you go in and tell them.
Yeah, pretty much.
And she could have completely taken all the air out of it, at least theoretically, you know, way back in the spring. But instead, she refuses, so when WikiLeaks finally releases the transcripts, then ba-dum, and it's a problem. And I predicted it. I predicted it.
Because she should have just been forthright. And
but 25 years of paranoia and torment, frankly, from the right wing, it turned her into a person who had a hard time being forthcoming.
Yeah.
And so she winds up being deemed, especially by the Purity Brigade, as being more corrupt than Donald Trump, which is mathematically impossible.
I know. That right there is so stupid. It's just like, just look at the Trump University alone. That is more corrupt than the Goldman Sachs speech. Just the Trump University alone. That is so corrupt. That whole thing, Trump University, just today, I guess the news broke today that he paid the payment for the settlement of Trump University was made today. And somebody I work with said they liked Trump, and I don't know if he was actually being sarcastic, but this person that said this is a Mexican immigrant. Yes, a Mexican immigrant that said that he likes Trump. And he kind of said it like he could have been sarcastic because somebody brought Trump's name up. And then I got all, like, you know, sort of annoyed or something, whatever you want. Something like, you know, kind of like excited about it, you know. Not in a good way, but like it got me riled up, and I started saying, he's a crook, he did this, and somebody looked at me and was like, he's not a crook, what do you mean he's a crook? I said, type in Trump University, and it shut him right up, because they know that either if he's, then they're like, oh, he settled that, though. It doesn't mean that he didn't, you know, admit to it. And it's like, yeah, but just read the Attorney General of New York statement. The statement was like calling his statement, Attorney General, I think his name is Eric Schneiderman or something like that. He was like going after Trump in the statement. And there's laws that says that when you settle, depending on what the circumstances of the case are, sometimes you're forbidden or the laws prohibit you to publicly make statements in regards that show bias or something like that. But if the judge, if it's so obvious that the person was guilty and it's a settlement, I think the judge can allow you to say whatever you want about it, like that, say whatever the Attorney General wants to say about it in public, something like that. I'm sorry, my legal speak isn't very good.
You're doing fine.
I'm trying to. Okay. His statement was very bold, calling it phony, calling it fraudulent, using words like that. And usually, if that pretty much means that he was allowed to say that because the judge knew. And by the way, the judge, I think, was that Judge Chirio guy who I think we all could remember when Trump said that he was too Mexican to preside over his case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be... I think one of the things that makes us most uneasy is the fact that we don't, we know it's going to be bad, but we don't know how it's going to be bad.
Yeah, nobody can really fathom the chaos.
But for instance, I mean, let's remember one thing. Back when the Republicans were having their convention in Cleveland,
yeah,
the Trump team changed the Republican Party platform. And the way they changed it was weaken a platform that called for military support for Ukraine defending itself against Russia.
That's what the Republican platform originally was, that they wanted to...
It was supportive of Ukraine's attempt to defend itself against Russia, and Trump's people changed it to weaken that language.
I do remember reading something like that on it, and they let him. You know, these Republicans should have looked at him and said, I mean, they have to know what's going on here. They have to know. How can they stand behind this man and let him get away with this? And then I guess they think that he's going to get away.
He's just going to make America great again. And you know what? We got proof. Because we've got another rash of economic anxiety breakout.
Oh God, lay it on me.
A week ago, you might recall, there was a wave of bomb threats against Jewish centers in the U.S.
Yes.
Happened again today.
Oh, wow. Really?
Somewhere between 15 and 25 Jewish institutions in the United States, in Florida, Alabama, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, Michigan, California, Ohio, Tennessee, Maryland, Minnesota, Delaware, and Missouri, were all threatened today.
Was it
buildings were evacuated? Yeah, it was bomb threats.
Same kind of thing. Same.
The very same. And you know, one thing you figure out from this is that it has to be coordinated.
Yeah.
These are coordinated assaults, which means that there is a right-wing domestic terrorist organization in this country, which is likely the purveyor of them. Now, of course, you know, that website that rhymes with light and fart is a clearinghouse for this kind of filth. Racist Bannon is as neo-Nazi gets.
Yeah, he is. And the fact that
in particular, the Gordon Jewish Community Center in Nashville, it evacuated. Someone there, speaking to Think Progress, said, people are shook, but we're doing good work, and we don't want our work to be affected by this.
Wow. And they, you know what they say? They actually have the audacity to say, oh, Trump's not anti-Semitic, though. He's got a Jewish son-in-law, and they, it's no, he's got a Zionist. I mean, I know he is Jewish. The guy is Jewish. But isn't he more of like a Zionist type?
Well, right, and I think you're right to note that one does not equal the other, because there are non-Zionist Jews all over the United States. One is a political philosophy, the other is a religion. But the problem with the right wing, or the problem with the neo-Nazis, is that Zionist, not a Zionist, they don't care, they hate Jews.
Right. And they try to spin it and say that, oh, well, he's not anti-Semitic. But the thing is, why is he surrounding himself with people who clearly are? Why is he letting people who support him who clearly are anti-Semitic? You know, you can really tell.
Because John, they were part and parcel of getting him elected. That's the thing that I tried. That's the thing that I tried so hard to explain. Everybody who voted for Trump was not a neo-Nazi. But neo-Nazis are a core constituency insofar as they are excited and highly motivated. Who do you think?
Yeah.
The Klan was knocking on doors. The neo-Nazis were knocking on doors. They're the ones who are saying, you know, tomorrow belongs to me.
Right. And they're going to be there at the inauguration, I guarantee it. I guarantee those people are going to be there. And I hope
some member of the for-profit media will have the stones to catch them Zig Heiling once in a while.
The thing is,
because they will. They can't resist it. It's like ducks coming to a duck call.
Well, you saw there's a picture I saw on CNN. Where it was a bunch of people seated around a round table with headsets on and stuff, getting ready for inauguration like it was the Super Bowl, you know? They're all excited for it. It's like, you know, they're all getting ready to normalize this fascist pig. And basically, I mean, these people have, I wonder if they really know how much damage they're truly doing right now as we speak. I mean, they are doing so much damage, it's just to this country, and it's so disgusting. And I cannot fathom it. I can't believe that this many people are this shameless, stupid, and reckless. You know, that this country is allowing this to happen. And then I saw another article, and I'm sure you might have came across this, that bikers for Trump are going to be protecting the Fuhrer.
Oh, yeah, they're going to have a wall of meat. A wall of meat.
I guess they don't believe in the First Amendment.
Yeah, I guess. You know, well, people, no, they don't. No, and you know, they left out a syllable. It's a wall of meatheads.
Right. Exactly. These right wingers, these freaks, they don't care about other people's rights. They only care about their own rights, you know. And then anybody who's, and I'm sick of them and other people using the term liberal as a pejorative. Somebody said that to me today when we got into a discussion about Trump. Oh, you're just one of them, you know, liberals. And I just kind of looked at him and I said, don't you ever use that term as pejorative towards me. Don't do it. You know, I mean, I got offended because.
Well, if you look around for it, John, there's a great quote from John F. Kennedy about what it means to be liberal. It's worth your time in looking it up, and you might even memorize a snippet of it, and just the next time somebody does that, just reel it off at them, and they will be physically blown backward by the contents of it. Hey, John, I got to roll along because we're getting close to the end of the program, but I really enjoy our conversation this evening, and enjoy each and every one of them. I look forward to them when they happen.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm a little exhausted today because I had a kind of a hard day at work. So I couldn't be more, you know, talkative or, you know, and things. So I kind of forgot some of the things I wanted to say. But all right, Bob. Yeah, thanks for taking my call again.
Oh, thanks for making it. You take care, John. We'll talk soon.
You too, Bob.
Bye
and,
now.
Bye.
We are about 11 minutes away from the end of the program. Speaking of economic anxiety, it broke out in Azle, Texas, too. Sabrina Pyle owns the Azle Cafe in Azle, Texas. A-Z-L-E. I'm just guessing. Monday, she took to Facebook to wish everybody a happy MLK Day and then said, come on over to the Azle Cafe and have some chicken and waffles with a side of watermelon. When asked, this woman who clearly suffers from terrible economic anxiety, said, oh, I didn't know anything about watermelons being a racist symbol and chicken. I wasn't thinking about the historical context. I was thinking we have margaritas and tacos on Cinco de Mayo, so let's have some fun with Martin Luther King Day. Yeah, I know. Meanwhile, one of the advisors, the White House advisors in the incoming administration, a guy by the name of Reed Cordish, he's a pal of Ivanka's. Reed Cordish, who is president of Entertainment Concept Investors, they do bars, nightclubs, you know, drinking joints all over the U.S. Well, Monday, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini said Reed Cordish would be his assistant to the president for intergovernmental and technology initiatives. Jesus, what does a guy who worries about the per unit price of pop out of the soda gun behind the bar know about intergovernmental and technology initiatives? Well, nothing. Mm-hmm. Now, Entertainment Concept Investors is owned by a parent company, which is owned by David Cordish, right? Well, guess what? Entertainment Concept Investors is presently the defendant in a pair of lawsuits. It all goes back to a project that Cordish was in with Jared Kushner, you know, husband of Ivanka, in city. Okay. There's a class action that's been filed against Cordish's business back in 2014 by a pair of men who say that they were beaten and harassed by white employees of that company. Cordish owns a club called Tango, and Christian Martinez, a former floor manager there, testified Reed Cordish's code words for blacks was urbans or Canadians. Ms. Martinez also said that Jake Miller, who is a vice president for ECI, quote, did not want any African Americans at Tango. At one point in time, she even testified that she heard Miller, okay, one of the partners in the enterprise, yell for the DJ to change the song that was playing, hollering, "Get that fucking nigger music off here," William Whitlock, apparently the real bad guy in this is this Jake Miller character, vice president at ECI. William Whitlock testified he made the comment that if he ever saw this many niggers in the building again, he would chain the doors and burn it down with me inside. He was embarrassed and horrified to see what we had done to his club. Another individual by the name of Thomas Alexich, go figure, testified he was hired at Cordish's Mosaic Club to, quote, start altercations with certain groups of people. By starting these altercations, I ensured that these groups of people would be kicked out of the club. And he was then told whom to target. I would estimate that 90% of the people I started altercations with were African Americans. The case is under appeal, ECI having won an initial procedural maneuver in the suit. Yeah. Meanwhile, Cordish himself has said, "It is a true honor for me to be appointed as an assistant to the president. The core foundation of the Cordish companies was built upon an ethos of public service and a commitment to transforming American cities across the country. Accepting this position is in keeping with those values, and I'm proud to serve our country in this capacity." Meanwhile, the Trump group, responding to the summary judgment that was issued against the plaintiffs, said, "The allegations referenced against the company were determined to be baseless and dismissed by summary judgment with no finding of wrongdoing. In fact, Cordish has been recognized from leading civil rights groups as a model company for inclusiveness. In its 100-year history, including welcoming over 50 million visitors per year to its developments, and with a workforce of over 10,000 employees, the company has a truly exemplary civil rights record without a single finding against the company or its principles." Except that testimony is sworn testimony. From like, what, 4, 5 different people? You can find it all over at the Daily Beast. New Trump advisor being sued for hiring white men to attack black patrons. Hoo-wee! We are making America great again!
Yeehaw!
Yeah. Time to get out of here. Prayer meeting Wednesday wasn't too prayer meeting-ish. I apologize, but we're probably going to have to interrupt some of the traditional themes in the next few years, because I just got a feeling we're going to be real busy. Yep, Barkway, I agree. In the chat room, Barkway says, if you heard how those folks talk about ordinary Americans in private, it would make your blood boil. I lived in that world as a kid, and some of the stuff I heard was jaw-dropping. It's true. So we will close the program, unless I missed something here. Yeah, we will close the program this evening with $165 to go in fundraising. And hopefully some of that will be made up by subscribers over the course of the overnight. And then we'll see where we are come Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we got a veritable briar patch of thorns to deal with already. Shoot, I could probably keep going for another 3 hours just on what I had ready for the program tonight. No kidding. So thanks, everybody. Thanks very kindly. And I will never forget now. I will absolutely not forget the Dunning-Kruger effect. Thank you to Carol Baker for that, who's Ninja. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia, for the great work on the website and everything else you've done over the years. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you very kindly to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.